You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Otto. How's it going?
All good. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well.
How's your day been?
Yeah, it's been all right. Pretty normal. Just at work. Had a couple of phone interviews this morning. So yeah, I feel like I'm primed for this chat.
Yeah. Just before we started the interview, you told me that the last time you came to BFM was pre-COVID for a fancy new band. So
yeah.
How does it feel to be back here at BFM?
It feels great. Yeah. Like you were saying, it's been a while since I've been here. So it feels like it's been massively upgraded. I think there was maybe only one, just that one big studio last time I was here. Maybe.
All right. Right.
Maybe not, actually. Maybe I'm making that up.
Yeah, I will take your word for it.
Yeah.
So to start things off, tell us about yourself. Who is Jeff Ong?
Yeah, so I guess I'm a indie pop singer, songwriter based here in Tamaki. My family's from Malaysia originally, so we came over here. Well, I guess I was born here, but they came over here originally just on a working holiday, but then just wanted to stay. So yeah, and I've been, I guess, releasing music and making music for the last, I don't know, seriously maybe since in the last 4 or 5 years, which has been great, you know, love doing it. I guess I produce and I mix and I master all my own stuff, which I really enjoy. And yeah, that's the elevator pitch, I guess.
All right. So Jeff, you dropped a single last Friday. Would you like to tell us about it?
Yeah. So the single is called Where Will We Go When the Ocean Comes? And it's a song about climate anxiety, or my own climate anxiety. So I wrote it last year as part of Exploding Rainbow Orchestra. And I guess I'd kind of been working on it on and off ever since then. Because originally, do you know about Exploding Rainbow Orchestra and kind of what it's all about?
Yeah, I do. I didn't go to the most recent one, but I am aware of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. They kind of take a song that's submitted by a songwriter, they commission songwriters to write songs and they arrange it for the orchestra, which is, it's just such an amazing experience. And I was really stoked to be part of it last year. So I wrote the song for that. And obviously, they arranged it for the orchestra. So the way that it sounds now is quite different to how it sounded then. So it's been a long kind of process of working on it, and it feels good to have it out now.
Yeah, so the next thing I was going to ask you about was, how has the song changed since you originally wrote it for the Exploding Rainbow Orchestra? How has it developed and what changes did you make to it?
Yeah, I guess sonically it's quite different, because the way that they kind of ask you to submit your song is as minimal as possible, as little production as possible, so that, you know, the arranger can take the song and they can arrange it however they want. So I guess it started really minimal, and it's grown into something a bit more big and a bit more, there's just a lot of synths, basically. I've just added more and more and more synths. But I think the core of the song has stayed the same. You know, I didn't really change anything in terms of the writing. It was really just the production.
So what motivated you to write a climate anthem at that point in time?
I guess the climate is on my mind a lot, you know, as I think it is for a lot of people. And I tend to write mostly from my own experiences and my own feelings, right? And I think I was feeling it quite acutely at that time. And I felt like I needed to process those feelings. Do you know what I mean? And I think I needed to nudge myself towards action, because it's one thing to feel anxious about the climate, but it's another thing to take that anxiety and use it as motivation to act. And I was I think I needed to confront that in myself. So writing the song was kind of a way of doing that.
So why is the climate and climate activism so important to you? And can you tell us a bit about your own relationship and journey with climate activism?
To be honest, I wouldn't go as far as to call myself a climate activist. You know, I think the climate is something that I feel really strongly about. And I think it's something that is going to impact, you know, all of society, right? And especially have an outsized impact on marginalized communities and you know, a lot of countries who don't have the resources that big Western nations have. You know, the climate crisis is going to impact people living there in a really outsized, disproportionate way. And I was I don't know, I just felt that, you know, I personally wasn't doing enough and I needed to challenge myself to do more.
So the song was maybe your contribution maybe to the climate movement or to climate awareness, possibly?
I hope so. It's hard to say, you know. I guess being an artist and having a platform, I feel that it's important to use it for positive change, right? And I was I think there's probably something to this, you know. I think I can use my platform to raise awareness and spread the word and hopefully motivate people to do more than just worrying, because for a long time that's all I was doing, right?
At the single release show, you invited Climate Club to set up a stall and to talk to people who were interested in climate change. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about Climate Club and your relationship with them and any work with them that you may have done previously?
So Climate Club are a non-profit organization, a charity, and they send out a weekly newsletter, which I guess shares high impact climate actions that we can all take, primarily around like affecting systemic change, which I think is really important, right? Because there's things that we can all do kind of in our day-to-day life. And I think all of those little actions, like they really, really add up. I think it's easy to be like, ah, you know, if I catch the bus instead of driving, it doesn't matter, you know, or if I walk somewhere instead of catching the bus, it doesn't matter. It does matter, right? I think all of these tiny little actions that we can take do matter. But beyond just looking at ourselves, it's hard to know how we can affect change at a systemic level, right? You know, with governments and members of parliament and big businesses and things like that. Like, how can we move the needle in that way? And Climate Club is a really amazing resource in that they are like always on the lookout and kind of researching and distilling these kind of actions for people. So they'll send out a newsletter which just has all the stuff in it that you can do to help move the needle at a systemic level. And I think that's really cool.
So it's like sort of giving people ways to help combat climate change in their own daily lives.
Totally, yeah.
You know, while acknowledging, you know, most of the pollution and emissions is caused by big industries, etc. But
yeah, that's exactly it though, yeah. Right? Like all the, I just got excited for a second there. Like, yes, you're absolutely right. Like the vast majority of emissions and things like that are, you know, from big companies, big industry, right? So that's why being able to affect things at a systemic level, like changing policy and like influencing government, is so important, because they are the ones who can force big business to act and to change the way that they do business, right? So that's why I think a resource like Climate Club is so important.
Can I ask you a cheeky question about the government and if any of the government's recent policies since they came into power possibly motivated your decision to drop the recent single at the time that you've dropped it?
Yeah, I mean, straight up, I'm not a big fan at all of the current coalition government. You know, the fast track bill, not a big fan. But like, I think something positive, right, is, you know, when the fast track bill was first announced, there was a lot of public backlash, right? A lot of protest, a lot of people kind of making it known that the population were not happy with it. And as part of that, the government has had to backtrack and walk back a lot of the powers, the ministerial powers that the bill originally had. They have just released projects that are being proposed under the fast track bill and like still not great, right? There's still a lot of like mining and kind of seabed exploration, which is not that good. But the point is that we have shifted it. You know, we as a community have a voice and we have been able to affect some change, right?
So the silver lining, I guess, is that the government has brought people together to make them care a bit more about climate change if they weren't already.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, so now I'd like to direct things back to you. Can you tell us about your own songwriting journey and how that began?
Yeah, sure. So I guess it started like when I was maybe 13. So before that, I had learned, like I had kind of classical piano lessons as like a really young kid. And I just like didn't really enjoy it at all. Like I didn't really understand it. It felt like homework, you know, like having to learn to play the pieces like exactly as they're written on the page and like do it all perfectly. And like that didn't really make sense to me. It just wasn't that fun. But then when I was 13, one of my friends at school, he had a guitar and he brought that in. And I remember seeing it and being like, oh my God, this is amazing, right? This is so cool. And like trying to like make some sounds on it. And I think it was like a switch like flipped in my head that I was like, wow, I can totally make music in a creative way, not in a prescribed way. Like you have to play the piece like this. It's like I can make whatever I want. And that was just like my tiny 13-year-old brain just went And I think from there, I just kept going and kept trying it and kept writing. And yeah, it's been kind of a long, hectic journey up until now, and it's still going.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I'm correct, you've experimented with quite a variety of different genres, you know, from jazz to rock. And even I think you were in a metalcore band at some point.
Yeah.
So how did you end up writing songs under your current style of, you know, disco-influenced indie synth pop that you currently have today?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. I think I just really love all kinds of music, right? And I feel drawn to play them and make them. So I guess that's kind of how I ended up playing in all these different styles. But I think something I kind of realized maybe 5-6 years ago was that actually I really just love pop music, you know, and I just unabashedly love pop. And I was like, I want to try and make that, you know. So that was kind of a learning curve as well, because I think before that, a lot of the music I made was really to do with like guitars and bass and drums and like organic instruments. And I'd never really played around with a synthesizer before that. But when I started making pop, I was like, I need to learn to use synths. And then that was like a whole another deep dive, like learning the world of synthesizers and learning the world of pop production. Yeah. And I just found I really enjoyed like the intricacy of it. It's all like a big puzzle, you know, trying to fit it all together.
Why do you call yourself a pop star for dorks?
That's another really good question. I think what I found when I was getting into pop music was like a lot of the themes in the songwriting were very like unrelatable to me. I think a lot of the songs, it seemed like the people making pop music were like very cool, and maybe the target audience for pop music was like cool people, and I just didn't, you know, and I still don't feel very cool. And I wanted to make music for people, you know, who felt like me, like who feel a little bit kind of on the outside or on the periphery of coolness. And like, I felt like I, you know, self-identifying maybe as a bit of a dork helps like reclaim that word a little bit.
As you mentioned earlier, your family's originally from Malaysia.
Mm.
Is there any Malaysian music from your parents' era that you grew up listening to that perhaps still influences you today?
To be honest, like not really. So my dad moved to London in the 70s. So he was like really, really young and he moved to London. And so he got really into a lot of the music that was happening around that time. So like, you know, he's a really big Beatles fan and he really loves like Joni Mitchell and, you know, the Rolling Stones and those kind of artists that were coming out of the UK at that time. So that's what I was listening to a lot of growing up. And so I guess that was kind of like the foundational influences for me, maybe. Yeah. And I've never really, I guess, had that much of a chance to listen to much Malaysian music.
Okay, so while you may not have listened to a lot of Malaysian music in particular, does your Malaysian heritage, particularly your heritage as an Asian artist in Aotearoa, does this have an impact on your musical process or your ethos, maybe?
Yeah, good question. Like, I think it's the sort of thing where you're culture shapes your identity, right? So like being born here, I feel like I'm kind of between two cultures, right? Like my parents' culture and like the Western culture of Aotearoa, right? Two quite different cultural landscapes, and like splitting those two kind of leads to, you know, whatever my identity sort of is. And I feel like no matter what I do, that's going to come through in the way that I write and the way that I create. Yeah. And I think recently there's been a big sort of discovery that there's loads of amazing Asian artists around the scene here that I just had never met before. So that's been really cool, like connecting with them, like Valer, like she's amazing, Ursha Island, Good Space, Reshma, like there's so many cool artists like doing amazing work here. And it's been cool getting to link up with them and write with them and play shows with them. It's been, yeah, really special.
How important is Asian representation in the local music scene for you?
I think it's important that people of every culture and every walk of life can see themselves represented in media, represented in a way that shows them as like a whole human. Do you know what I mean? It is visible in media, because I feel like in the past when people from marginalized groups are represented in media, it's often like as a stereotype or as like it's quite tokenistic. Whereas I'd like to see more representation of us just as humans, you know?
And earlier you mentioned the variety of Asian musicians and creatives that you'd been following along or working with. Would you say that Asian representation is improving in the local music scene?
I think so. Yeah, because I think maybe it's like it just felt like we didn't really know that we all existed. You know what I mean? Like all of us have been out here kind of making music for a while, but then we just, for whatever reason, like never ran into each other. And now that we have, like we're able to kind of combine, get together, and like it's the sort of thing where, like, you know, a rising tide lifts all the ships. So I feel like it's really cool that if we can all kind of continue working together, then we all come up together, you know.
So now, as we wrap up the interview and come to the end, mm-hmm. What does the future look like for you? Is there anything else that you have planned in the works that you'd maybe like to tell us about?
Yeah, so this song is part of an EP which is going to be coming in February or March next year. So I'm kind of just in the final sprint of getting it all finished at the moment. And yeah, it feels exciting to have another body of work. You know, it feels sonically, it's a little bit different to what I've released in the past. Like, it's a bit more kind of indie rock influenced, which is really fun. And like, I've been trying for a while to figure out how to like mash those two worlds together, you know, like synth pop and indie rock. And I feel like with this EP, I've started to figure that out. So I'm excited to share it.
And will this EP also have a focus on climate change?
Not specifically. I feel like the kind of things that I write about tend to be just whatever I'm feeling strongly about at the time. So like, I think when I wrote the song, I kind of happened to need to process this kind of climate anxiety that I was feeling. So, you know, it's not to say that, you know, there won't be another song about climate action, but yeah, I can't really plan what I'm going to write about. It just kind of comes out.
This is how you were feeling at that point in time.
Yeah.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.